Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John gets a 67 Mustang and some pointy sideburns and wonders if relatives can see us from heaven. Meanwhile, I wonder how long I could stand on one foot and ponder why having my accomplishments forgotten is actually a huge relief. Plus, a conversation about living by a standard versus being ruled by our feelings or the actions of others. Today's episode is not sponsored by IKEA. Our instructions are self-explanatory. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Better buckle up for another trip to Bantertown. Let's talk about that. John and Johnny coming from springtime in Nashville, Tennessee.
Buckle up. Keep your safety harnesses. Keep your hands and arms. Wait, your arms and feet inside the podcast at all times?
Did you ever on a roller coaster put your arms and feet outside just to see what would happen?
That's my friend Stumpy did. What's wrong with you? No, I never did that.
Stupid Stumpy. My wife, you know, as we consider vehicles for our daughter who's 15,
yeah,
we have a lot of talk about safety things.
Like, right. But you're looking at getting an older car.
Like side curtain airbags is a big conversation for us right now.
Whether they're...
I was thinking, I didn't drive a car with a side curtain airbag, and look at me.
Yeah.
It's amazing that I'm alive, truthfully. But
I want multiple curtains.
Not just a side curtain.
Just, yeah, like if you're in the theater and you're behind the one curtain, you have another curtain that you're waiting behind. I just want, that's my fear, by the way, as a performer, of like, if you've ever done a show, you ever done anything like that where you have to come out between the part and the curtains?
I have.
You can't find the part, so you do this whole thing where you just panic. You're just panicked.
Okay, and now we just see it.
And
moving.
Then people just laugh and they think it's a bit. You're like, I can't get to you. Most theaters have like a little, the part in the curtain's like, there's like a tab on it with like a piece of green tape or something where you can.
Shouldn't they pull the curtain for you when you come out?
I don't know.
Jimmy Fallon's curtain gets pulled, bro.
Some of these places.
You just.
My favorite thing ever, as far as waiting to go, like you're waiting for a literal old situation like that, an old world talk show situation like that. Favorite story ever. Gary Goldman, who's a great comedian. He said whenever he does The Tonight Show or any of those talk shows like that, he's waiting. And there's a guy, the stagehand, got the headphones on. All right, we're live in 5, 4. And he goes, right when he gets to 3, I look over at the stagehand and I go, can you get me out of this? I just think that's so funny.
That's
what
great.
A funny thing to say.
That's great. Did you see Conan O'Brien on Fallon the other night?
Yes, I saw a clip of it.
Yeah.
It's great.
We watched the whole interview.
Yeah, he actually has gone viral this week in a strange way. Conan's always been very appreciated by other comics. You know, he's kind of like our guy.
Yeah.
Because he's so unassuming. He's known to be a very kind person.
Yeah.
And he always had comics on his show that did not have like a huge following yet, or they were kind of up and coming, or they were a little bit strange.
Yeah.
Like, he helped break people like Tig Notaro and John Doerr and Patton Oswalt and people who could not get on The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
But they would go on Conan and do their weird thing, and he would just let them do it. So we've always loved him, but it's so cool to see people. I was actually listening to a podcast of his. He has a channel on SiriusXM. It's the Conan Network or whatever, and they play his podcast, Archives. And the episode I was listening to was about, he was talking to somebody about, why can't we appreciate people why they're still alive. Like, you have to wait for them to die to hear these eulogies. And what's funny is I was telling my wife, I go, Conan's having that moment this week because he did Fallon and he did this show called Hot Ones, which is where this guy, it's a YouTube channel that's like gone viral, but basically it's just a talk show where people eat hot wings. You've seen a bunch of the GIFs, probably one of Paul Rudd eating the wing. And it's like, there's a million of those, but it's from that show Hot Ones. And basically you try to interview somebody after they're eating the hottest wings they've ever eaten. And they get, progressively hotter. But evidently Conan's was the best ever. Like, by all accounts of the 200 and something episodes of this show, Conan's was the funniest. He was so disarmingly funny. And so a bunch of the clips have gone viral. And so literally on Twitter, Conan's just trending and people are saying the nicest things about him. You know, crazy stuff that you just would never have gotten out. And it's almost like, did Conan die? That's how much people are gushing over it. And right. I think that's so great.
Right.
And I think we should give people their flowers before they're dead. Like, I think that's, you know, there's something to that. I think we've talked about that before, about there was a Robert Duvall movie called Get Low, and it was about a guy who's terminal, but he decides to have his wake while he's still alive. I think it's a true story, based on a true story. Because he's like, I don't want to wait to hear what everybody's going to say.
Yeah. It's interesting. We used to have a guy here who wanted us to do a living funeral. He would call it that, a living funeral for our pastor. And Andrew just doesn't want nice things said about him.
Right.
In that
way. He makes him uncomfortable.
Yeah, but it was such an interesting way to say it, you know? And it does cause you to stop. Like, one of my favorite lines, you know, and I'm sure it's elsewhere too, but one of my favorite John Foreman lines in a song is, I'm living more than for a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Christian world, in the ministry world, there really is, because you do funerals a lot.
Yeah.
There really is a sense of, you can get caught up almost in an idol sort of way.
Yeah, you want,
what are they going to say about
right,
me?
Your
someday?
Legacy becomes this idol of like, how, what's the paragraph to sum me up going to say?
Yeah.
And am I living in that paragraph? Am I adding a line to it now with this accomplishment I just did? Is that going to be, oh, they'll for sure mention this because this is a big one.
But it's so pathetic. You go, this is all going to get boiled down to at best an hour and a half.
Uh-huh.
And then they're all going to go to eat at Chili's or whatever.
Right.
And not, I mean, like, I just thought that was interesting. Like, you get, if you get outside of that, I don't really.
Yeah.
I do think about it, actually, when the kids from the youth group, I think about that. You know, we recently had a student pass away that we had lost touch with from, you know, years ago.
Yeah.
And so that thought, and I've been talking to some of the other, you know, kids and stuff about, you know, this guy was in his 30s, and so most of them in their 30s, and sort of that, I guess, mortality coming home to be a reality for them a little bit. And you do, you think, okay, if all of them were together, what would they say? Of course, then I start going through all the things we should have done differently or all this and that. And at the end, I hope that they remember something. I no longer want them to remember something about me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still have plenty of pride and all those things, but there's that idea of, I want them to remember something that makes them alive. For now and forever. You know what I'm saying? Like, that, something that brings you life. And if I'm a part of that, amazing, you know, but.
Right. Well, it's good that you feel that way, because I'm not sure it's going to go as good as you think at your funeral.
No, I don't think so.
I'm just kidding.
You
no.
think God lets us listen in on the funeral?
That is a thing that we kind of wonder, right? We think that grandma is watching us like it's a recital. She has to come to. It was this, somebody said that the other day in a comedy bit. They were just like, what a bummer in heaven. Like, you get to experience, like, the joys of paradise, and you got to stop and be like, hold on, Dave's got a recital. You got to pull up a chair. You're not even free from it in heaven.
Right.
Dave got a big promotion at work, Nana. You're going to want to see this. Do I have to? You do. You have to, right. Because Dave thinks you're watching.
Stop surfing on the crystal sea and come over here and watch this.
Exactly.
Because right? That's what Nana's going to be
you
doing.
You never get out of, like, you're going to be a volleyball dad even in heaven. You still have to be there for the big
watching
moments.
My great-grandchildren.
Yeah.
You can't even get the ball over.
Yeah, it's horrible. They're just bad
at
volleyball.
She's eight. Leave her alone.
Can I send her a message?
No.
Can I haunt any of these children? That should be built in.
I do wonder about that. That's so. There's such interesting. Of course, lots of things and fiction has been written about it. You know, but I do like whatever that state is.
Yeah.
Like, again, I don't mind saying this. It doesn't. I don't think this is
what,
that weird.
What you think? You think heaven is a state?
I'm saying whatever state you're in between now.
You think it's Nebraska?
Is it, You think heaven's Nebraska?
I know almost heaven is West Virginia. Oh. So what's next to West Virginia? Virginia?
Oh, wow.
Because if you're almost in... Okay.
Okay. There you go. I've been to both.
Yeah.
It's
lacking. No, come on. We love all of our United States.
Which, by the way, the history of West Virginia and Virginia, how that happened, is really fascinating. Anyway, but I always like, sometimes I'll be praying. I had this moment yesterday. I'll go through, it's like just instinctive. I'm thanking God for family or praying or mentioning family before God.
Yeah.
And I said, God bless my mom and my, and I started to say dad, because I mean, for years I would say bless mom and dad. And so instead I go, bless mom. Then I kind of stop. It's a little sad for a second, you know, because it's just instinctive. But I was like, hey, tell dad I said hi.
Yeah.
And then I miss him. Like, I think I'm really good with that. Like, I don't believe in praying to the dead.
Right.
But I believe, like, if dad is with God, if I believe in those things, which I understand to the unbeliever, this is all like, this is insane. But like, the resurrection, the life after the dead, is the thing that sets us apart. Into a different belief system altogether. So if I'm going to, I mean, I believe that, then why not? God not go, hey, John says hi. Like, John, why? I don't know why you always freak out about that.
I'm sorry.
Like,
I'll do better. I'll do better. I'm sorry. I really will do better.
Hey, speaking of freaking out.
Oh.
You guys are going to freak out when you hear what these guys have to say right now. I mean, it's going to be unbelievable. We should take a few moments, Johnny, and hear a word from a few of our sponsors. Mm.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
I'm freaking out.
I know. I knew you would. No, that whole idea of like legacy, the pressure that you feel to have a legacy that when they do boil you down in whatever eulogy they give, that it's just so awe-inspiring and soul-stirring. That pressure is wild.
It is.
Especially if you're a creative like we are. Like, mm-hmm. And you know, it's funny. It comes back to Conan. This was a Conan article that I read, and he said... He was talking to another comedy writer or maybe another famous person, and they said Conan was really worried about, because he takes these wild swings with some of the sketches that he would do on his show.
Yeah.
And not all of them land.
No.
That's how comedy works. That's kind of what's great about it, is that you don't know.
But he stayed brave.
Yeah, he stayed brave. And so he was talking to somebody on the show, and I'll forget the names, but basically I think the person was saying in 1938, Time magazine said that basically the entertainer of the year was Clark Gable. And he was like, oh, okay. Conan said, okay. And he goes, when's the last time you thought about Clark Gable? He goes, a long time, decades. Yeah. And he goes, exactly. And he goes, when I left the room, he goes, this is all going to burn, basically. And he goes, when I left the room from talking to that guy, he said, you would think I would feel bummed out. He goes, but I was lighter than air, because I realized it really doesn't matter. So it gave you the freedom to fail, because you're like, when you think like the successes won't last forever, so why try? That does resonate with some people. But what resonated with him was the failures won't last either.
Yeah.
So I can take these wild swings. I can keep doing it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's just how you look at it.
No, I do. I get comfort from hearing about others who you've forgotten. That's why I study history that you maybe never heard of before. I find comfort in that. Like, oh, we forgot about this, and look how important it was.
Right.
And how important it still is. And that, yeah, there's something, I feel, me feeling smaller makes me feel better. than me trying to feel bigger than I know that I could ever be. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You can't, I can't fill these spaces. And it's the American dream has shifted. The American dream at one point, or at least how we like to portray it, is to, you know, make a living,
mm-hmm.
provide for your family, picket fence, but it's about family, right? It's about having land to farm. Mm-hmm. You know, those kinds of things. And again, I know I'm being insensitive to all the others who that was their land before and those kinds of things. I just mean, like, if you just take straight up 20th century American dream type pop mythology almost, that's right. What it was about. And then American dream become a millionaire. Like somewhere along the line in our 80s and 90s, the all-encompassing thing was if I could just be a millionaire. Our parents, that's when sweepstakes lotteries and get rich quick schemes, I mean, became so much more. I'm sure they were always there.
Scrooge McDuck. We wanted to dive into a swimming pool full of gold coins.
Yes. Somehow he can do it. Everyone else walks on it, right?
Yeah.
Because we'd be the ones who could pierce the golden surface.
Seems like it would hurt.
Surface.
Yeah. Really hurt.
He went right on through, though. Because you assume you're the guy that can swim in it, even though everybody else would hurt.
Like you'd break your face.
Come on.
He's
man.
Going in head first. Going to the doctor.
But it's good to just love my family well.
Yeah.
It really is it should be a dream
that
I have a place to live, that we're not at war, you know, that my kids are doing well. You know, I think it's just, I think we've sort of taken out the golden hue of normal life that's supposed to be like, do you get to be with your family at night?
Somebody spoke about that. I think it was either the Oscar winning, what was the Life is Beautiful that was about the Holocaust. And somebody, the producer of that movie, was talking about, they had an actual Holocaust survivor come up and help with their speech, I believe. And they were talking about that, I don't take for granted anymore the gift of an ordinary day at home with my family. And that's the most beautiful thing. Just an ordinary, boring day.
Yeah.
Like the thing that we go, another day.
Right.
Like if you've lived through something horrible, an ordinary day where you didn't get bad news or you didn't get hauled off to the gulag or whatever it is, like, that becomes this huge gift, and we take it for granted because we string ordinary days in a row so much that we're just like, you know, we just lose like the wonder of that, that there's something great in the ordinary.
Yeah. It actually reminds me. So, Johnny, you're going to kill me.
Oh.
This is not time for quote yet.
Oh.
But it reminded me when you said that of a quote. And if I did this, then every time I would like,
yeah,
always be reading C.S. Lewis, because truth is, I get some C.S. Lewis quotes every day. Like, I'm not just out reading. I read, but also I read, and I have C.S. Lewis books, Johnny, but then I get things also, because I think there's so much can be, you know, brought to. But one of these was, so don't count this, it's not my quote yet.
Okay.
It says, to shrink back from all that can be called nature into negative spirituality is as if we ran away from horses instead of learning to ride. There is in our present pilgrim condition plenty of room, more room than most of us like, for abstinence and renunciation and mortifying our natural desires. But behind all asceticism, the thought should be, who will trust us with the true wealth if we cannot be trusted even with the wealth that perishes? Who will trust us with a spiritual body if I cannot control even an earthly body? So he's talking about self-control and fighting against our nature. But to me, there's like an element there of that if I see the negativity or even the suffering, and I see them as something blocking me, again, like horses in a field, instead of like, oh, these are for riding, like the difficulty in my life, even of my negative,
right.
my negative nature, like I have room to grow here and to go somewhere different, as opposed to just stand here and go, well, I'm never going to get over that. Like I see it, that suffering or that difficulty is an opportunity to actually go somewhere different that I couldn't go on my own.
Yeah, it's good. There's so much there. Like I never heard that quote before. That's a great quote. Yeah, I think there's something to be said for, like, there's a dance. Like, there's a great Ben Rector song that I used to play when I would tour, before I would leave for a tour date. Like, I would play it on the plane. I would make it like a ritual, and it was like a reminder song for me. And I used to play it all the time. It was a song he wrote called Fear, and it's about how he's at this point in his career now where he's doing these big theaters, I guess. So he's kind of doing a snapshot of like, now there's 1,000 people in the room and it freaks me out a little bit. But I remember when he's remembering in the verses about times in his career, like there's a line that says, chased me down outside of Georgia and I was sure that I was done, but something in me wouldn't turn around and run. So he's remembering this time when fear took hold, and the song's called Fear, but in the hook of the chorus is, I learned to dance with the fear that I've been running from. And so this idea of fear is something to be harnessed like the wind almost. It's not something to just be like crippled by and let it stifle your process. Just to go, that's going to be there. Somebody else I was listening to an interview yesterday talked about how you, it was Bill Hader, who's amazing. Like, I think the further he gets from his SNL career, you realize he's one of the best that's ever been on that show. Yeah. When you watch his old sketches and you see how talented he is now, he's become a director and writer and performer at large now. And so he's just doing so many great things. But he was talking about, like, he's always had crippling anxiety, and even on the show. But he goes, somebody that he did therapy with just said, just acknowledge it. Instead of being like, instead of trying to hide it or stifle it, he goes, I'll just take a minute. He goes, I did it backstage before I came out to do this podcast interview. He was telling, it was a live podcast that he was doing. And he goes, I was just backstage pacing. And he goes, and I just go, I am really anxious. And he goes, just saying it, let like some of the air out of it.
Yeah.
And let it have less control over him. Just admitting it and being like, but we're going to do the interview anyway.
Yeah.
I feel really anxious right now, but here we go.
That's interesting. Because again, it's like, you mentioned the wind. It's almost like the wind's invisible and it's blowing all over the place. You can sit here and act like it's not there.
Yeah.
Or you can put up a sail, right, and acknowledge it, right? I mean, I think about how many times, and that's the whole do the intern, the work inside your internal world.
Right.
Is there are patterns and things repeatedly happening to you.
Yeah.
That over the course of a lot of people's lives, most people's lives, they are surprised every time.
Yeah.
Or they fall into it, well, this is going to happen again. But there's no like understanding of its pattern, its origin, where the motivations are meeting the circumstance, or how your wiring is contributing to your response. It just feels like, well, this is what happens. The wind blows me over.
Yeah.
Right? Like this is what it is all the time. As opposed to going, you can't know everything, but you can see, oh, okay, I can become aware of the fact that every time my spouse says X, this argument ensues that leads me to this feeling. Or every time my boss does X, I react like this. And that it's not as random as we want to make it, that there really are patterns in each one of us that are related not just to the circumstance, they're related to us. We are the other variable in the equation of our lives, that we're always there. We're the main constant of what's happening. It's a constant variable, Johnny.
Yeah, and I will say, too, that if you are an actual sailor, you know, you need to use an actual sail to guide yourself through the wind. Don't just think that your good attitude or your planning.
It's going to take more than internal work.
You need a real, actual sail.
Right.
We have a huge sailing community that listens to the show.
I tell you, the contingent's huge. It's a shocking amount, actually. It's
a lot of them have yachts.
Oh, yeah.
None of them are patrons, which I find
that's hurtful.
A little... John, how do you become a patron of the show?
That's a great question. Just a totally random question. You would just go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com, and there's a button there. And it gives you ad-free content if you become a patron.
Click on support, get ad-free content. And if you want to send us a note, we love hearing from our listeners. Go to hello@talkaboutthatpodcast.com. That's the email address for our show.
Yeah.
Or you can click on the bottom right. It's a little voice bubble. It says, hey! That's what I think when I see a voice bubble. I think of a cartoonic hey.
Yeah. Maybe that's AI now.
It's AI.
Hey, I wonder if AI will develop, if it can develop sort of a whimsical personality.
Like a morning zoo podcast that's just computer voices.
Wouldn't that be great?
Like the wacky guy and the, come on, fellas.
You come on, guys.
Yeah. Let's keep moving here.
Now, look, I called a best friend yesterday and I recorded it. Let's just listen in to what happened.
Yeah.
Like, you know, can they do the whimsical stuff? Johnny, that kind of the real question is could we do the whimsical stuff?
Would you be fooled by an AI whimsy person? Probably.
I don't know.
I think the kind of person that's being born right now is going to grow up listening to AI music and AI, reading AI books and seeing AI entertainment, and they're not going to know that it's a wild mm-hmm. thing. We've had that conversation, but I really do think that, like, our brains, because we already think about what we tolerate and what we, you know.
Very little.
Yeah.
I tolerate very little, which is shocking that we've done this podcast.
Shockingly intolerant. That's our brand.
That's That's what we were going to call the podcast before, and we thought better of it. Johnny, you're going to love where I'm going today.
Oh, okay.
I know I've already
quote of the week number two.
It's a real quote this time.
Some would say John's cheating.
Well, Johnny, I've got the record button over here.
Lucky for you, so I don't care.
If you want
to do whatever you want.
Yeah. Today, we're going to launch into our segment that we like to call "They Talked About That." Omar N. Bradley, United States Army. He was born actually in the late 1800s, all the way through World War II, rising to the rank of General of the Army. And he was the first chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, oversaw U.S. military policymaking in the Korean War.
Okay.
He said, this is great, Johnny. This is like total alignment. Total alignment. Set your course by the stars, not by the lights of every passing ship.
It's good.
Set your course by the stars, not by the lights of every passing ship. I have that talk a lot in our teenage world because to me, emotions and feelings are really important, right? So we're living in a world now where I don't want my daughter growing up as if we're dismissive of feelings. And especially, yeah. I think the way that she's wired, that would be very detrimental to her feeling valued by her family. It's not just, hey, listen, we don't sit in those emotions here. Yeah. In this family, you pick yourself up and go.
Right.
The same time, you can overdo because emotions are like caffeine a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like too much of them will cause you to feel bad, right? So there's got to be a limit to it. So how do you limit something without telling someone it's not important or making them feel invalidated? So this is that constant for me
mm-hmm.
of, I don't want you to feel like I don't care about this. Also, I don't want you attaching yourself to this. To me, that's like the lights of every passing ship. Like mm-hmm. if you set your life by what these emotions will be, they are to be felt, not to be followed. Like they tell you something. If you see a ship going that way, then you know that's one way you can go, right? Maybe it's a ship that you're connected to in the Army, in this particular metaphor, the Navy, sorry. And so you need to be going the same direction. You lost your way. You need to follow. So sometimes following your feelings can be important.
Yeah.
I think more to me is following your gut, which the definitions of those would be different. Like in Enneagram triad language, you have three types that are a part of the head triad who are more brain focused first. They think first. Then you have the feeling or the heart triad, which they're going to feel first. And then you have the gut triad. And I think for me, the most confusing thing over the years has been, well, what does that mean versus feel? How is feeling and gut reaction really that different? And I think the way my wife would say it would be like, if you're in the gut triad, then when you have this thing, it's a thing you feel in your body.
Yeah.
It's not just in your internal self. Like you have a physical
mm-hmm.
feeling in your gut or in your head or whatever. Like, this is almost a visceral reaction to something.
Yeah, I think to me, a gut triad person is like, because I've read an article about this thing of almost like there's an evolutionary like caveman brain thing that keeps us out of danger. And it's the reason we're living longer. Because like if we walk into the jungle, we get into a fear mindset and we go, I don't want to do that. I thought I saw a snake or whatever. And because of that, we live longer. But we also might die because we didn't go forage for food. So like if you're a gut triad person, like you get your spidey sense tingles when there's danger, but you might not win the big thing because you're never taking risks.
Yeah.
But our lack of risk taking has been rewarded with longer life.
Yeah.
And so it's a strange thing that's developed.
It is strange because you do need to learn to follow your gut instincts. But I think they need to be in, or even your feelings are important.
Yeah.
All of these need to be balanced. I mean, get great any sort of therapy wisdom would say, I mean, the goal here is that you don't just do what you thought first, because you might be wrong in what you're thinking.
Yeah.
You don't just do what you feel. You might be wrong in your feeling. And you don't just react to your gut, because your reaction might be not balanced. So,
yeah.
So community, we would say here in church, I mean, having other people, like you're in my group, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm thinking something, I'm like, all right, guys, I got to bounce this off of you, because I'm probably thinking something that's not that far off, but I don't trust it right now. What are your thoughts, gut reactions,
right,
and feelings about it? So that's, you know, part one. Then, you know, putting up against God's ways. Okay, what can I find here?
Right.
The way God feels about things.
Yeah, I used to think about it as like standard tuning on a guitar. Like that's the stars. So like you could be, if you want to tune a guitar that's been out of tune, you can start with the top string and then tune the next string to that top string.
Right.
And you could get it in tune with itself.
To itself.
But it's not in tune with standard tuning.
Right.
If you don't have... If you don't
go
know
play
what
with a band who tuned to a tuner, you're going to sound awful.
Right. That, to me, that's what it is. So we have a whole mindset in culture now that's in tune with itself.
Self.
But we have no standard anymore to hold it up to. So if we ever did, we go, I'm way off. So we just stop looking at the standard. We go, well, throw the standard away. I'm good. Because, you know, and I'll start my own band.
Right.
You know. Wow. John.
they didn't hear that.
Okay. John
we just heard something really loud in our ears.
John started his own band in my head.
As soon as he said that, a bunch of music started playing.
That was wild.
Yeah, sorry. No, that's really good because, yeah, you just get everybody to tune to your tuning.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
So you have a lot of people literally playing their own tune, and they go, look, we're good. And you go, yeah, but you can't have community that way, because how are you ever going to play together? You don't have a set standard.
Yeah.
You can't sit in with anybody. You've literally isolated yourself by building your own standard.
That's interesting.
John, this is a book.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm taking it.
Okay.
Listen, John and Johnny need to write a book together.
Yeah.
We're totally scared to do this.
A little bit.
Because...
I think it would affect the relationship.
Does it have to be funny? Because if you're in it,
yeah, I mean,
what else you got to offer? You see what I did there?
Oh, man.
Johnny hates it when you do that, but you also want your book to be funny.
Yeah, it would need to be for it to be.
Right.
People would have expectations.
What, on brand with you? Is that what you want to say?
On brand.
If we stuck with your platform, what other gross words got to come up with now? Can we not just be friends who write books and sell them?
Mm-hmm.
Wait. No, right. I just brought my thing in.
Yeah. Can we not just make a pile of money as friends? There's no way the money would affect us.
I still love it. When we were in the band years ago, it was like it became a running joke because it happened for real the first time.
Uh-huh.
I think I said something like, Johnny, I'm really ready for this music thing to take off or something like that.
Yeah.
And you were just like, oh, well.
That's all I was waiting
for. That's what we're waiting for. Here, well, let's just go do it. Like there was someone
he's ready.
Just wanted to do it. No, one more thought on that triad thing that also could be a book that just came to me. Like people make assumptions. Religion makes assumption about how God,
mm-hmm,
like, either interferes or interacts. And you can see it in the vast sort of spectrum between evangelicalism or liturgical movements or charismatic movements, or like everybody kind of picks a triad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God is all about the way he thinks. And so this is all about the content. So we're going to be people that memorize scripture, we think first, and we're going to totally dive into theology, be completely intellectual, and we're going to spend our life doing that, and as if God has only one way of interacting, and others are all in God's fields.
Right.
Right. Well,
it's
God,
all emotionalism.
Right.
Yeah.
This is emotional. This is, and then others are all in God's reactions, which I believe all three are very holy and important. Like, I think God's word is that way, but God reacts to poverty and injustice. He cares deeply about the widow and the orphan and the oppressed and the refugee. And like, there's the gut reactions of God that we see, you know, in scripture. I think it would be interesting, as much as we say a balanced viewpoint of making decisions or having emotional health in your life, to not set your course by the passing ships, you know, would be to have a balance of those three triads. I think to understand the way of God really is in terms of a functional kind of daily way, not just theological viewpoints, would be, hey, you know, look, yes, the content really matters. Also, yes, the heart of God really matters. And I will be unbalanced if I focus on one to the detriment of the other. Also, yes, if I don't find in my life having those gut reactions like God does to poverty, to those in need, then maybe I'm missing out on a fuller expression of how God
yeah,
really interacts with me and with the world to the detriment of just all the others because I pick one. So anyway, interesting thought. We'll call it the God triad.
Mm.
Not to be confused with the Trinity.
No.
Not the triune God. You but try with God. You better get it right because it's going to be, I haven't thought this through. Let's just do the funny book.
Okay, yeah.
It's fine.
You're right.
Tony, that reminds me, though.
What's that?
You're the other person in this podcast who has a segment.
Oh, that's right. That was an interesting segue. You're like, Johnny, wrap it up. John, let's go all the way back. This week in history, we call it Talk About Then. John, this week, 1964, mm-hmm. Ford's new sports car officially goes on sale.
Mustang.
The Mustang. Did you have a Mustang?
I did.
What year was yours?
65.
You got the 65?
My brother technically owned it. I had a 1988 Plymouth Sundance with defective paint on the hood and a cracked block.
As much of a woman getter.
No. But when my brother had a Mustang that he painted cherry apple red.
Yeah.
And whenever it, candy apple red.
Candy apple red.
Sorry. Cherry's red.
Cherry and apples are different fruits, John.
And so whenever my car broke down, he had another car he was driving. He let me drive that my senior year. And
That was your year. Year of John. They still talk about it.
I had the Jason Priestley 90210 hair going on.
Did you have the pointy sideburns?
I did.
Extra pointy?
I had the nice sideburns down. I had the big flowing hair, and I drove a 65 Mustang. Oh, I'm sorry. It was 67. 67.
Okay.
I drove a 67 Mustang, and everything was right with the world. I will tell you this, though, before you go back into your history.
Yeah.
Old cars, especially when you're a kid, not as romantic as you might think.
It's a lot can go wrong.
Like we would.
You're always tinkering with them. You have to, things go wrong.
It looked amazing.
Yeah.
But like it might just run out of gas randomly on a quarter of a tank.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Mm-mm. Sometimes it might just bottom out on a speed bump because they had old shocks and you can't take them too fast. So it was great. You know, but
I remember my old Electra, if you ever wanted to just floor it, it would go boom. It would make a pop sound and then it would take like 2 seconds before it went, and now we're going. Literally, if you hit pedal to the floor, it would just have like a second where it was just like running in place like Shaggy and Scooby.
It's almost like the Titanic. Like you sent a signal down to the boiler room. They're like, boys, and they start scooping stuff
into what's happening in that 2 seconds? But I really need to go now.
That's great.
So, all right, John, I just wanted you to guess, what was the base price of the 1964 Mustang when it came out?
If you're a true Mustang, by the way, aficionado, you would know if you have a 1964 Mustang, you don't call it 64.
What do you call it?
64 and a half.
Oh, okay.
What month? Did they say what month it was made?
No.
So you would call
April. It was April.
So they called a 64 and a half Mustang. They wouldn't say 64. I don't know why. You would always say it was 64 and a half.
Well, there you go.
I would say base price in 1964 and a half.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with $8,500.
$2,368.
It
sold
less.
An industry record of 417,000 units in its first year. So they sold almost 500,000 of these.
Wow.
It was originally intended to be a mid-engine two-seater roadster. But that changed when the sales of the Thunderbird increased after adding a back seat.
Wow.
So they kind of looked at passing ships, if you will.
Come on,
said,
now.
Let's change our
course. But that was also a Ford.
Yeah.
So they looked at their own passing ship.
They kind of thought, we need another car that's kind of like a sporty, but they want more families to buy them, I guess, right? Because so I guess they didn't want it just to be a two-seater.
I like the Mustang all the way through the, I think early 90s, they turned Mustang into like a tiny little sedan.
Yeah, it wasn't. It
stopped being
cool.
A power car for a while.
Yeah, it wasn't a muscle car looking thing.
And then they brought it back. Mid-80s, it got good. Late 80s, it was good. Maybe it was 90s. When was it? Maybe that was late 70s I'm thinking of. Because you had it when it was like the big, like fastback
huge
GT version.
Off the front of it. Yeah.
They got real big and strong there, and then they went down, and then they brought them back. But
all right, John, we'll keep moving because we've got a few to get through today.
Let's just do this for all day.
The John's car history. John, the world record in 1982 was set for standing on 1 foot.
Oh, wow.
Guinness Book of World Records, do you want to take a guess on how long in Ravi in India stood on 1 foot?
These are hard because if I guess, I'm either way off or this is do it. I'm going to say, is this hours or days?
It's hours.
Okay. I'm going to guess that he stood.
It's a long, I mean, you would go to fall asleep, I would think.
I'm going
to
say he stood, in order for this to be a world record, 237 hours.
34. So you could make it. If you think you could do 237, you're thinking that's doable.
And
right?
Again, I'm just making stuff up here. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what his training is.
Like. I mean, you got to understand, you want to go to sleep at some point. Because I'm assuming if you fall asleep, you've not. So you had to stay awake for this, too. So.
What bird stands on one foot and falls
That's
asleep?
That's the flamingo. I don't know if he falls asleep, but the flamingos
Maybe
tend
he
to,
had like a flamingo thing going on.
I think
on.
Other birds might do it, too, but the flamingo's the most famous.
Okay. And this guy now.
One-legged standing bird. I wonder why flamingos do it. Maybe they're trying to set a record. I don't know. John Henry Hudson set sail in 1610.
Uh-huh.
On his fateful voyage to find a Northwest Passage, his crew would mutiny 14 months later, setting him adrift, never to be heard from again.
Yeah, I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, Henry Hudson. It didn't go well.
Well, you know what's named after him.
The Hudson River?
Yeah.
Huh. Can you mutiny on a river? That feels like a not...
Sure you can, John.
It's like a really tiny place to mutiny.
We can mutiny on a church staff. You can
yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I brought it up because I was thinking, like, when we think of mutiny now, we think of, like, your staff turning against you.
Yeah.
Do you think you've ever been a part of, like, a mass mutiny?
No, I've not been on...
Just a slight uprising you had to put down with an iron fist immediately.
you mean am I being mutinied against or
I mean,
part of...
I mean, are you aware of the current mutiny against you? Because it's coming, buddy.
This entire episode has come to this one point to let me know.
I've got them here. Come on in, guys.
Come on, guys. We're...
It's tough. Mutiny, yeah. There are laws, right? Can't... You know, you're not allowed to mutiny, technically, right?
On a ship?
Yeah. You're all going to be court-martialed and...
I believe there are there are international shipping
you
laws.
You got to have rules.
Right.
He's the... You know, his word is law.
Because you're...
Unless he probably had... There's probably reasons he could be, you know...
Yeah. Because you got to think, man. You're out there...
Yeah.
So, like, there's no... It's its own little planet.
You got to have floating. Somebody... Somebody's got to be in charge.
There's a
somebody's
lot
gotta...
of sailing and ship references today. I'm
yeah.
really... This
you just
is...
call a ship a planet.
Well, we mix a lot of metaphors here,
yeah,
too.
It's like
we bring
up the Death Star.
Horses right before the sails, right before the... Yeah. Sorry, guys.
Okay, last two, John. Leo M. Frank was born this day, 1884. He died in 1915. That's important because he was an American factory worker. He was convicted of murdering... 14-year-old Mary Fannum, although sentenced to death, after reviewing the evidence, the governor commuted his sentence to life in prison, but angered by the change in sentencing, a mob kidnapped Frank from prison and lynched him. The lynch mob was said to include prominent citizens, including former Georgia Governor Joseph Mackey Brown. Nobody was charged in the lynching. So these people didn't like that he was commuted from life from death to life in prison. They mobbed the prison, grab him, and this is why I put it in the history, though. His conviction was based largely on the testimony of Jim Connolly, but was overturned in 1986, so this would have been a full 100 years later, 102 years later. His conviction was overturned in 1986 after evidence surfaced implicating Connolly. So the guy who was the reason that he was convicted at all was later implicated in the murder of the girl.
Okay, first of all, you said 1915 and 1986?
No. He died in 1915. He was convicted. He was born in 1884. So, yes, he was convicted in 1915.
Okay, so this happened 60-something years later.
Yeah.
So they...
Yeah.
Well, roughly, yeah, 70 years later.
Right, you're right.
So, wow. What city?
This was... let me see what it says. This is an American factory worker. I could look up more. Yeah, it doesn't say.
This wasn't racial in origin, was it?
I don't know. We need to look up more. Fagan. Fagan was the last name. Mary Fagan was the 14-year-old. So Georgia Governor Joseph Mackey. So it was Georgia. Yeah. So the Georgia governor was involved, the former governor, when he was involved in the lynch mob. Nobody was ever charged in the lynching, so they didn't have, there was no comeuppance for the people who.
Wow.
Isn't that wild? And that was the craziest footnote, though, was that the conviction was based largely on the testimony of Jim Connolly, but the conviction was overturned in 86 after evidence surfaced implicating Connolly. So.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so,
a movie.
Yeah. This is at a pencil factory.
Okay.
By the way, a pencil factory in Atlanta.
Hmm.
Yeah. Her murder later led to one of the most disgraceful episodes of bigotry, injustice, and mob violence in American history. There were two small notes next to her body that purported to pin the crime on Newt Lee. Is that who we're talking about? Newt Lee?
This is Jim Connolly.
So, Connolly was the factor's janitor and a well-known drunk. And so, Connolly shifted the blame towards Leo Frank, the Jewish owner of the factory.
Hmm.
Despite the absurdity, they nevertheless took hold. The case's prosecution the prosecutor was a bigot and a friend. This is from history.com, by the way. Friend of Georgia's populist leader, Tom Watson. And so it was tried, and the blatantly unfair trial went forward, and la, 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 where Frank was incarcerated. So, yeah, they blamed the Jewish owner.
Yeah.
That's why it's such bigotry.
That's why.
And so, yeah, it was, and the guy actually covered it up. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, this is crazy. Anyway, so last one, John.
Although he received a posthumous pardon.
Yeah, a posthumous pardon in 1986. Yeah. John, finally, this week, born 1497, died 1553, another one where the death date is kind of important to the story because it was Pedro de Valdivia. He was a Spanish conquistador, which, man, what a great thing to be. Conquistador? Just that flowery...
It's a great name, but they did a lot of horrible things.
They did a lot of horrible things, yeah. But I'm saying if you're going to do horrible things...
Be called something.
Be called, like, a give you a, you know, fancy 50-cent word or a famty.
Famty.
Anyway, he was a Spanish conquistador. The first governor of Chile, founder of Santiago, Concepcion, and Valdivia. He was killed during a campaign against the, I'm not going to try to pronounce this, Araucanian Indians. Legend has it that the Araucanians captured and executed him by pouring molten gold down his throat to satisfy his thirst for treasures.
Wow.
So they did a little bit of, is this what you want, buddy?
This is
buddy?
What you've been wanting.
Yeah.
That's
it kind of mirrors the golden calf thing a little bit, but
right.
Way more
Ooh,
intense and deadly.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people died in the golden calf day.
Oh, do you think they did?
Well, yeah.
From drinking the calf?
Well, no. When the earth opened up and swallowed a bunch of them because they were still in rebellion. Actually, that already happened. Then they drank the gold calf. The ones who survived drank the golden calf. Yeah. Yeah. Because remember, it was like, hey, if you're against God, get on this side.
Right.
Or against Moses.
Yeah.
It was like, I wouldn't do that. Guys, if you ever hear someone says, look, if you want to be against me and Moses and whatever, then go and stand over here. Don't do it.
Don't stand in that spot.
Stand on Moses' side.
Yeah.
But yes, they poured molten gold
down his throat. That's the legend, anyway. Wow. I don't know any actually Araucanian, but it was in This Week in History. So
that's fascinating.
We've never been led astray before.
Hey, speaking of history, I didn't tell you what I did last week because you'll never guess it.
Okay,
I went to an event in Nashville with my wife. So we had some friends who were volleyball parent friends who they had some tickets that someone had a loss in their family and they just needed someone to go with them.
Mm-hmm.
Which we usually determined when we were home. We went to downtown Nashville.
Yeah.
In an old church that's now an event center.
Right.
Are you ready?
Sure.
I'm not sure you're ready.
Okay.
An Edgar Allan Poe speakeasy is what it was called.
Okay.
These are pop-up events.
Right.
They do them in different places. And you sit in like rows. And it was really, really fun. It's like they have a little set and the actors...
Yeah.
Are doing, they're not, they have, they're adaptations. They come out and you got lights and all this spooky stuff, you know, and then they bring drinks to the crowd.
Ravens and such.
Yeah. They have the drinks are named after the raven or whatever. And then someone gets up and does like a 5-6 minute.
So would you like a refill? You go, nevermore.
It really was. It was like they're very like in costume.
Actually, bring me one more.
I'll have one more.
Please. One.
Yeah.
One for more.
Quote me. One more. But so it was, yeah, it was really interesting. I'm not a big Poe fan.
Yeah.
Well, they had a lot of funny things they did.
Right.
I forget what they all were now. Like, if you guys want to donate to the actors, you can because we're all very Poe. Like, it was very, like, she kept throwing Poe in to all the things, but it was really well done. That was interesting.
They're like, if you don't like this, you would like it a lot better if you were on opium. But anyway. Poe was into some stuff. He was in some heavy stuff.
It was interesting to hear all the loss in his life and how that, like, he was writing about the death of a wife while his wife was dying of tuberculosis. And that's when they started to go, maybe this guy's...
Right.
But they also thought maybe that was just part of... Actually, he was the first American, I think, writer to make a living at writing.
Okay. So he should be your hero, John.
Well, I'm still not making it.
Oh.
I mean, well, it just depends on the year, Johnny. Being in writing is a... Whew.
Sometimes you're rich, sometimes you're Poe.
Poe.
It's okay.
Man, well, that's a fun day today, Johnny. Went a lot of places. We boarded the ship.
We let the wind carry us where it would.
We did.
We're not afraid of it anymore.
No.
We're going to dance with that fear.
That's right. We're going to ride the ponies on the ocean.
Put up a sheet and just see what happens.
Just go and... There was a lot of metaphors.
It was.
We're not afraid of metaphors here. We're even mixing them.
Nope.
Yeah. And you know what, guys? You shouldn't be afraid to find more episodes with more metaphors. Where would they find that, Johnny?
TalkAboutThatPodcast.com. Over 300 archived episodes for your family's enjoyment.
You know what would really help us right now? Did you know, by the way, that there was an Apple update, if you're an Apple listener,
no,
that was put out that actually really hurt the podcast numbers of almost all major podcasts?
As far as download numbers and things?
Yeah, because it was
a correction.
If you had automatic downloads set to your phone, if you had 300 episodes, they all just go to your phone. Well, now they limited it where it doesn't do that anymore. So if you can go into your phone, hit the little buttons, and go up there to actually download the last five episodes,
hey,
it would help.
It does help us.
Yeah. And also share it and subscribe and leave a review and send us an email and maybe go subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Good grief. We don't ask
for a lot. Maybe go to our
Patreon.
That was
like seven things. What do you mean you don't ask for a lot?
Listen, guys, if you love it, you can do all those things. Just push right now that reverse 15-second button and just write down everything I said.
Yeah.
Just slowly.
And then send that in a group email to all your friends.
That's right. There is an exciting... actually, our website is being redesigned as we speak.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty exciting. New website stuff coming out. Also, there's going to be some opportunities for you to subscribe to other content from us.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's coming. So it's... it's fast on its way, Johnny.
Mm, swiftly moving.
Yes.
Gingerly on its way.
Gingerly coming as fast as you can get here. Hey, you should go to Johnny W, JONNIEW.com.
Do it. New tour dates coming out every day. I'm actually in Florida this week. I have two dates, Fort Lauderdale on Thursday night, the 18th of April, and the 20th of April, I am in Bonita Springs, Florida. Both of those are like performing arts centers. Tickets still available. Last minute Florida show if you want to come check out the show.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, and more dates coming.
Yeah, it's exciting. Got a few things cooking on my side, Johnny, but they're not as...
Don't downplay.
The writer's world is not as prolific in terms of its weekly bookings.
Until you get like a book launch, then you're going on GMA.
I did that one time.
Well, but now it's a well-worn path that they can have you back. They go, oh, we've had that guy.
Yeah, I don't know if that's...
Is that not how it works?
I think they go, we had Reggie. Who was that other guy?
Yeah. No, they remember you.
Was he just carrying his bag or...
Yeah.
Johnny, I was. And I would carry Reggie Dad's bag anywhere I went.
Okay.
Happily so. And yours too, Johnny.
Thank you.
If you'd invite me. Awkward. Hey, guys. Hey, thanks for the time you gave us this week. It was not awkward. We had a great time with you. Let's do it again next week. Go on.
Talk about that.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.